This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
If you're just joining us, the SEC dominates the selection committee that is on Sunday. 14 SEC teams in this tournament, and it's good. We're going to talk more about this with Connor Riley, as well as what's going on with the Dogs and spring practice. It is Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by our friends at Mark Spain Real Estate. Also, Spencer Strider, really impressive performance today, Mike. His first spring outing, and man, he was electric today.
Yeah, man, everything you'd want to see. I mean, looked like mid-season, pre-injury, second injury, obviously first injury with the Braves, but he looked great.
He did.
He was dealing, I mean, velocity, everything you want to see. And you and I were wondering, is he going to be, is he going to take a while to get back into form? And if he can put another couple outings like that, I mean, I don't know why you'd wait till May to see him, other than, the wear and tear issue of how quickly they want to get his workload up.
Yeah, I got excited. I'll tell you guys right now. I mean, when he came out, and I mentioned this earlier, right? Ground ball, strikeout.
Strikeout, 6 of 8 batters.
Strikeout.
At one point.
And I was like, oh, this looks like Spencer Strider. We'll get more into it, but right now, let's talk to Connor Riley and talk some Dogs. Connor, we just found out. Please fill us in on why the spring game is not going to be televised. What's the deal here?
Well, I think Kirby wants to keep Georgia's options open in that regard. He cited last year about how Kentucky had to end up canceling their spring game. And, look, on the one hand, this does make the in-person experience that Georgia is still planning to do for G-Day on April 12th. I think more of an event, it encourages more people to show up. I think there would be potentially a little bit more juice on G-Day for just people to see something in the stadium to have a better in-Athens product. But at the same point in time, I know not everyone wants to make it to G-Day. Or not everyone wants to come to Athens. And so that this isn't going to be televised, there's a part of this that you wonder, okay, maybe Kirby doesn't want people seeing what Georgia has with seeing Georgia is out there doing. And there's another part where, maybe they want to make G-Day more special to the city of Athens and to the people that are coming to Sanford Stadium and make that a bigger event in that regard.
Kirby just wants to kill it, Connor. Kirby just, we've talked about other universities. Nebraska comes to mind, and I just think – I get it. Another week of practice. He doesn't want to go to the rigmarole, the injury risk you touched about. I talked about that last week. I mean, Kirby, is this just something that a lot of other coaches are going to take Kirby's, follow his lead, and Kirby's going to kind of do this passive-aggressively?
It's certainly something where, Mike, you look at what Kirby said last week. He's like, I want to have spring games. You look at his actions in the past, and you point to 93 K-Day and the impact I think that had on the Georgia program. But then you look at something like this, and I agree with you that it does make you raise an eyebrow in that discussion. Because, yes, even though there are some programs out there, Nebraska, Texas, USC, even Missouri and the SEC, opting not to have a spring game, Texas A&M is still getting into Kyle Field the next week at 1 o'clock and playing a spring game. Georgia Tech, 1 o'clock, April 12th, is going to have a spring game. So I do raise an eyebrow with this, and I am curious to ultimately see what Kirby Smart and Georgia decide on when it comes to what G-Day is going to look like. When Kirby spoke about it last week, when Josh Brooks a few weeks ago had a chance to speak about it, there was nothing concrete in those plans, and I'm curious to see what changes going forward with what Georgia ultimately elects to do.
So before we get to the Dogs and Mike White and the tournament, let's talk some spring football and what's going on with the offensive line and what are you hearing coming out of the first few practices?
It's a massive spring for this group. It's a massive offseason for this group. They lose four guys to the NFL, and Tate Ratledge, Dylan Fairchild, and Jared Wilson, I think, are going to be top 100 players. So it's not like talent was an issue there. And, you know, they don't bring anyone via transfer portal, and I don't think they were ever planning on doing so. So, and there's a lot of unknowns with this group, and a group that just frankly has to play better going into this season. So there's obviously a lot of pressure under Stacey Sarles, given everything that has transpired this offseason. Now, they do have some players that I think, you know, maybe overlooked a little bit. They've got guys that have starting experience coming back: Ernest Green, Monroe Freeling, Micah Morris, and Drew Bobo. And if you're able to keep those guys healthy, I think that's going to help you in terms of putting together an offensive line this year. They've also got some young guys that they're really excited about. Bo Hewley from the Atlanta area is someone who has made real strides this offseason, and I think could at the very least push to be a depth piece and maybe even a starter. You've got Daniel Calhoun, who I know we've talked about before, and I know Georgia very much likes what they've seen out of him, and his work ethic is going to help him get on the field. And then they've got a really talented freshman out of Westlake in Juan Gaston, who, if he's able to reshape his body and get his weight under control, they love the athleticism and the ability that he brings to the table. And so there's some young pieces here on the offensive line. But Kirby Smart mentioned they always knew that this was going to be a year where they're going to lose a lot on the offensive line. And then you add in the fact that the offensive line a season ago wasn't all that good. Mm-hmm. It's a major question mark, not just for the spring, but for the rest of the offseason as well.
Connor Riley, guys, you can read his article in Dog Nation today talking just about that. Kirby Smart says, grow up and play to his offensive line. So if things go bad, that means Georgia would reach into the portal right after spring practice if they don't see the traction for they're looking for from their O-line.
That is the case, but I don't expect them to do that. And Kirby Smart's talked about this before. You know, offensive line is one of those positions where very rarely you see a quality player go into the transfer portal. More often than not, those become very competitive players if they enter the transfer portal. The last transfer portal offensive lineman Georgia took was Tyler Catalina, and that was way back before Kirby Smart's first ever game at the University of Georgia. Right. They've always put a priority on recruiting the offensive line well. They've always put a priority on developing young offensive linemen. That's really going to be tested this offseason, and especially now that Stacey Sarles is in his fourth year as the offensive line coach here at Georgia. These are all his guys. I'm very curious in seeing just how this sort of season puts a further referendum on what Stacey Sarles is able to do as Georgia's offensive line coach.
All right, let's talk some hoops. Mike White, Dogs trying to make some history, 20-12 back in the NCAA tournament for the first time in 10 years. Open play on Thursday, 4:35 on TBS against Coach Mark Few and Gonzaga. I have said, Connor, despite the fact that it's Gonzaga and everybody knows what their history is, I do like the Dogs' chances in this game. Talk to me about what you've learned about this team and what's been the difference with Mike White over the last four or five weeks.
Yeah, I think ever since Georgia's bye in the middle of February, they've come out and they've been a better basketball team. I think they've grown a lot. It's still a very young team. R.J. Godfrey's the only guy on this team that has NCAA tournament experience, but they go on the road and they play Auburn well. They beat number one seed Florida. You get wins at Texas and a home win over Vanderbilt. Even against Oklahoma, you know, yes, it's a loss, but I thought they played well in that game. And so, you know, they're going to play a Gonzaga team, which has the longest first-round winning streak of any team in the NCAA tournament right now. The last time Gonzaga lost its first game of the NCAA tournament was back in 2008, and the team they were playing against, they had this guard, I don't know if you guys remember him, Steph Curry, playing for Davidson. So it's going to be an uphill battle. This is a Gonzaga team that a season ago made the Sweet 16. They've got some talented players, but they're not super deep. And this isn't a vintage Gonzaga team in that regard. And I'd point out as well with Gonzaga, you know, they've only played St. Mary's since the turn of the calendar year to 2025. That team that made the NCAA tournament, and they went 1-2 against them. And they lost to a Kentucky team, which Georgia beat head-to-head. So I think based on the strength that Georgia went through in the SEC and everything that they played there, they're not going to be overwhelmed. And while, yes, it's an accomplishment for Georgia and Mike White to get to this point, they know that winning a game and winning against a program like Gonzaga is going to do potentially so much for them. So they know they have a very big opportunity, even though this season has already been characterized, in my opinion, as a major success for the program.
And Connor, we were talking about it earlier. I mean, guys that like help drive the program, you know, the big boosters that cut the checks, the guy that helped drive the NIL and all that. Are they waiting for a sign like that to like further engage?
Right. And, you know, this year they did spend more money in terms of putting this roster together and building this program out. And like, sure, you have an Asa Newell, who's a five-star target and is going to be a first-round pick in this upcoming NBA draft. But you look at the guys that have developed, and the reason this Georgia team, in my opinion, made such a leap over the last 4 to 5 weeks, Silas Demery has made such improvements as he's coming to the end of his sophomore year. That's a guy who, if you can get him to stay for another year, you develop him more. This Georgia program, I think, can take another jump. Blue Kane got better over the course of the season. A lot of these players.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Young players got better over the course of the season. I think that's a really encouraging thing to see from a coach. And especially at a place like Georgia, where the reality is you're going to have to be able to build. And so the fact that Georgia's been able to do this, the fact that those NIL checks, I think, have seen some return on investment, and the atmosphere that you saw at Stegman Coliseum, Mike White shouted it out last night after the game, absolutely made a difference for Georgia this year. I think that this has been a really encouraging step for Georgia going forward, and knowing that, hey, we can do this, and with a little bit more, we can potentially have a much greater season.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about the development, and those guys have gotten better. It's funny, because Greg Sankey said this, and I want to know if you agree with him. Connor Riley, guys, covers the dogs for Dog Nation. We're talking about Mike White and dogs in the NCAA tournament. And you know, he was talking about all the redos of the arenas and the new arenas and all of the stuff that they've done to help. And I'm just curious, like, the investment that the SEC has tried to put into basketball, do you feel like that's paying off? Because that's what Sankey's talking about here, whether it was Auburn, Ole Miss, Florida, the redo of arenas, and all the stuff that they've tried to do to help these programs.
I absolutely think so. I think you see investment in those programs, not obviously just with the facilities, but you look at the coaches, the caliber of coaches that – requires there. And even Georgia, you know, hiring Mike White away from Florida, which was not a popular move at the time because there were a lot of people who thought that White's time at Florida may have been coming to an end. To land a guy like that who had been able to sustain somewhat level of success at Florida, even if it wasn't the Billy Donovan level, speaks to where Georgia is compared to with Tom Crean and the way that things have run his course at the end of Indiana and whatnot. I think, you know, the investment that you've seen in Georgia basketball, the changes that they've made to Stegman Coliseum, even, you know, it may not be a big thing, but the way that they have moved the students around and I think prioritized them to creating, in my opinion, a better game day environment than it was, say, 5-6 years ago, I think speaks to just the attention to detail that this league has had in the SEC. And we've seen it for so long in football. It's not a surprise to now see it carry over to basketball.
Great stuff, Connor Riley, as always. And again, just want to be clear before we let you go, the spring game will not be televised, correct?
That is correct.
All right. This revolution will not be televised, Carl.
Connor, tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
Yep, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorRiley. We're still going to have spring practice coverage. And then 4:35 on Thursday, Georgia's going to take on Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament, and we'll be there too.
Good stuff. All right, Connor, we'll talk to you next week. By the way, for those of you who are wondering, and I do like the dogs, I've been saying it all day, Mike White 4-0 in NCAA opening round games.
2-2 against Mark Few in his career.
So if you buy into statistics and all that stuff in first round games, maybe that plays a role in you picking the dogs outside of the fact that maybe you're just a dog fan. Most people, I will tell you, will be on Gonzaga because of the history, and Mark View's had a great tournament run.
Right.
Mike, we got a lot of stuff to get to, man. There's so much going on.
Well, a story that came out today, and I don't follow him on it. I'm not spending a lot of time on Instagram. I'm too old. I just do Twitter. But Kyle Pitts said some things which have a bunch of Falcon fans going, "Oh, really?" I'm just curious to gauge your response to this, Carl. Should some things be better left unsaid next?
Four o'clock hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. 5 o'clock hour, we will get back into the decision that has everybody kind of scratching their heads, and you shouldn't. It's pretty easy. But I do know that some Falcons have been outspoken. As a matter of fact, Grady went on digital media today and said, "Hey, goodbye, Atlanta. Thank you for everything." Now, you guys know Grady's home is here, and he'll be here in the offseason, but he's not playing here anymore, at least for, you know, the foreseeable future. But he did say, "Hey, thanks, Atlanta," and gave a big shout-out and, you know, basically said, "Hey, 97 out," which is his number, and said, "Thank you for repping me and supporting me." But there are other Falcons who are making a social media impact today.
Yeah, I saw this today, and I'm not really, I spent a lot of time on Instagram like I should, I suppose, but I did see this got forwarded to me from a listener thanks to Ronald, who sent it, and then I retweeted the image. Falcons also put it up on the Falcons Twitter page, and I followed them, because the message is this. It's basically an image of Kyle Pitts leaving or entering the tunnel, coming out of the tunnel on the field,
all right,
and kind of doing the Superman thing with the eight as he's coming on the field, and it says, "Year four had its ups and downs, but we prevailed. Year five, I'm coming 10 times harder than I ever did. Hashtag we ball." So, you know, whether this comes from if Kyle put the time in to put this image out there, or he's got people that work for him that do that, or his agent put it together. I mean, first things first, last year we didn't prevail at anything. You know, I mean, he was 20th amongst the receivers. We've done the numbers. I mean, his prevailing would be another one's failing, Carl, I guess, one way to put it. If you feel that the season ended, had the season ended after week 9, we could have said we prevailed. We were 6-3 and in the catbird seat in the division. And we know how that turned out. But Kyle goes on to say that he will work 10 times harder. And needless to say, the reaction amongst the people that saw what I posted is, well, dare I say, a little negative, saying, "Well, yeah, it's a contract year. No blank, Sherlock."
I told you guys all offseason last year that the most important piece was a guy named Kyle Pitts. And it didn't happen. Now, it's not Kyle's fault that our quarterback's arm fell off and he threw the interceptions in, you know, 9 and 5 weeks. But the impact that we needed from him last season, which I thought was going to completely open up this offense, again, another year went by and we didn't get it. So now I'm supposed to believe that in year four, Mike, that it's all coming together. It's all going to happen. He's going to be that unstoppable force that we've talked about for the last 5 years. And now I'm supposed to believe that he's coming 10 times harder, as he quotes here, than I ever did before.
I just work here.
My question, we know this, Kyle. My question is, why has it taken this long for you to come 10 times harder when you were taking with the expectations of coming to change a franchise with the 4th overall pick? Like, whatever you're saying here, whether it's effort, energy, willpower, route running, whatever this is, it should have already been there. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, Mike, because we need him. If he's going to be on the team, I need him to perform. So if he's going to say, "I'm coming 10 times harder," more power to you, Kyle Pitts. I surely hope so. But I have been very disappointed in your performance up to this point. And I've been touting you as the difference maker in this offense, and it is yet to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's at the point where even if he balled out this year, if he had a big year, I mean, I still don't know if it's a slam dunk, I should say, to bring him back.
I agree.
Because you would have had two really productive years. Now, again, guys, I don't know how you rate production. I know some of the fanboys out there don't like hear anybody getting criticized, but he was 17th in yards per game. He averaged 35.4 yards per game. He was 22nd in receptions amongst tight ends in the NFL. So this is a 4th overall pick, and this gets us back. I know some guys get upset when we go down this road. It is what it is. You're the fourth overall pick. You're expected to be an elite. George Kittle, you can be anybody. I mean, any of the really good tight ends, Travis Kelce. Heck, Trey McBride is becoming a star for Arizona. Brock Bowers, in his first year, did everything that you'd expect him to do as the fourth overall pick. Jonnu Smith had much better numbers, the guy who was actually on the same team as him 2 years ago. So, as a fan, yes. I mean, if this is something that somebody in his camp thought would be a good idea, not really. Because it's to Carl's point, it conveys what the hell you've been doing the first 3 or 4 years here.
Yeah, it should never. I'm going to come 10 times harder. That should be your mantra from the start. How I'm going to approach this, and fine. If it took you a few years to get it, okay. But Mike, I don't know, man. I can't kill this because if this is heartfelt and him somehow the message has gotten through that hey, dude, your career is going to be over. If you have another year like you've had, because it's going to be hard to convince teams that you're a difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, first-round picks always do have that extra chance because other teams feel, I can fix him, I can get more out of him. But you're right.
If okay. Unless you don't love football.
Right. Unless you're not passionate about it. That's why.
And Vic Beasley's a prime example of that. This idea that get number one picks or first-round picks get a second chance, Mike, that's not always the case. What we don't know about Kyle, and I don't know if you want to answer it or not, is does he love it?
No, he doesn't love football.
Okay, so then I don't know if he gets another
shot.
No,
what I'm saying is, but first-round picks always do get other opportunities in the league because the value of being a first-round, especially being a fourth overall pick, he will get more opportunities. Now, what he chooses to do with them, only time will tell. But I'm with you. I mean, this guy has had every opportunity. Now, the thing that always comes back in this argument is the delivery system, the quality of the quarterback play. Does Zach Robinson really have a plan for him in this offense? But then there's simply the eye test. When you hear players that call the game for a living, that play the position, when you hear what Greg Olsen says, when you hear what Rodney Harrison says, a guy that big shouldn't be that soft. You know, that I would think resonates. And then the coach, his coordinator, and general manager all said they hope to see the best Kyle Pitts. Right? How many times have we heard that said this last year?
Mike, I've been saying he's soft all year long. All year long. Too big. Guys smaller than him should be taken advantage of. They should be using his height and his size. All this stuff we've been talking about. And that's why I'm so frustrated when you bring up, not you, but just people generally talks about Kyle Pitts, and then he puts stuff out there like this. It's like, dude, you got to do something. Show up.
Right. So now it'll be the chemistry between Michael Penix. So for those that want to make excuses, it's technically another quarterback. Now, he did bat the first ball that was caught thrown to him for an interception against the Giants late in the season.
Didn't help.
He did also have, you know, a really nice catch in traffic against the Commanders. The kind of stuff, the gritty red zone play that should define Kyle Pitts in that Commanders game with the season on the line.
What do you guys think, by the way? I mean, look, you've heard us. You know how I feel about this. I don't know how you feel. Maybe you feel like, hey, dude's being sincere and honest, man. He's going to come out and have a good year for us. And, you know, all we can do is hope so. But I'm so far removed from believing that this can happen that it's almost going to be like a miracle for me to see it take place. And then if you say, well, Dukes, what's a good year?
Better than what he's put on the stat sheet the last 2 years.
Can he do what he did his rookie season?
Yeah, 1,000 yards. But the touchdown, this is the red zone thing. This is where we get into, are they using him the right way? Does the quarterback have the confidence in him? The two touchdowns against Tampa Bay, the one where he nearly left the ball on the pylon. But that's the kind of effort we're expecting. I'm not expecting you to have two touchdowns every game.
No.
But when you're drafted fourth overall, that's what you're supposed to be. So, guys, unless you are just simply a Kyle Pitts apologist, everybody else around the league looks at this guy and says he's a bust as the fourth overall pick.
Mike, didn't you tell me, was he starting at the end of the year?
No, technically he was the backup.
I'm sorry?
If you look at the snaps per game, he was actually having less than other tight ends on this team.
404-726-0929. No way in hell that should happen. No, I don't care who the quarterback is. There's no way that should happen. There's just no way that should happen.
Right.
And what we're telling you is, as the season went on, the production went down, right? And the coaching staff made a conscious decision to play others over him. Why?
Number one, the blocking's never gotten better. That's part of it. I do think later in the season that was a big part of it. But you're right. I mean, guys, you look at the numbers. We talk about the usage rate. Now, the one thing is he will actually pop. The one area that he does pop statistically is the yards per catch because there's so few of them, and generally he can get down the field. That's what makes him so tantalizing and yet frustrating because he should be the guy living down the seam and breaking those big plays. But, yeah, man, you go back and you look at the receiving numbers, 1 for 7 with a drop against the Giants, which led to a turnover.
Yeah. Look, I
7 yards, one catch. That's not, you weren't drafted fourth overall to do that with the season on the line.
I hope things change for him. Again, great post. If it's sincere and heartfelt, Mike, and this is what he believes, that, hey, I'm coming strong and I'm doing things this offseason I've never done and I'm going to be a different kind of player, great. But I can't get excited about it because I've been excited for you and about you for 3 years. And now I just don't even know what to believe because I'm tired of blaming it on other people. It was the coach. It was the quarterback change. Then it was another quarterback change. And it was an offensive coordinator. Now it's another coach. Not like at some point, man, look yourself. We got to look ourselves in the mirror and say, hey, either I can do the job or I can't. And I don't know, Mike, maybe he's finally done that and said, I don't care who's throwing me the ball. Like, I don't know, Ja'Marr Chase
right.
or Justin Jefferson or any of these other guys that just make plays no matter what their position is, and they go, I don't care who's throwing me the ball. I'm going to make plays.
Well, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, you're supposed to be – I don't know. What did you expect a guy who's drafted the highest pick the Falcons have had in decades? You expect him to be a George Kittle or what Brock Bowers was last year, what Travis Kelce or Dallas Goedert have become, you know? It's just – you've got to be better. And you said it last year. This year, I do put a little bit of onus, onto Zach Robinson. Because if he's willing to put the work in a contract year, hell, maximize it. But this would be the ultimate irony. This guy goes for 1,010 touchdowns and then leaves.
What do we have coming up in Guy Talk?
By the way, we can always franchise tag him if he does ball out.
That's true.
It could always be good. Hey, man, remember Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner? When the Roadrunner would make a mural of a tunnel against a wall?
And he'd run into it.
Well, somebody did that with a Tesla to see how the auto-driving thing would work out. We'll let you know how that turned out. And when's the last time you sat on a beach, laid on your back, and put your girlfriend up on your feet? Well, that's how Bill Belichick was getting down in Florida. We'll explain. Hope everybody made it through the storms. We were talking about that to start the show. Carl had a couple of trees go timber on a Saturday night. And I know, like a lot of folks, I was glued to the TV waiting to see if you were going to see some convection. And wait a minute. And the weather guys do get hyped over this because this is their Super Bowl. But obviously they do a great job because, as you said, all of a sudden they were literally right within like a block of your house. Yeah.
That's those sirens go off and it freaks you out in real time. Like when they're practicing in the spring, when you hear those sirens, and I think they do it like on Wednesdays in Cobb, and you're like, ah, yeah, the sirens, tornadoes. But when you're actually in a storm, it scares the crap out of you because you know it could be really close.
So, again, I think it was like Hiram up that neck of the woods. I know sort of like Paulding County seemed to get more of the damage.
We were just up there.
Yeah, just over there at Buffalo's Cafe. But I know some of the trees in Buckhead, it depends on where you live. I told Carl, man. Oh, watching those big loblolly pines swinging like a hula girl was freaking me out. Hey, I actually, and thanks to my neighbors, Courtney, they just put we have an extra car that no space for us. We put it in their garage.
Oh, nice.
Says, you know, hail. Boom, boom, boom. Last time we had a hail show, it looked like a Titleist. Speaking of cars, Tesla's Elon Musk is adamant that their cars can drive themselves. Now, I've seen it. I was in an Uber after the Falcons-Bucks game this fall. Me and the dude went down to the Inner Harbor area. Actually, we ran into Baker Mayfield at that restaurant at the Sports Social, Madison Social. Anyway, or American Social, doesn't matter. We were driving to Tampa in a car, and the guy turns back, and he's talking to me. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. He goes, no, man, it's all automated. Kind of freaked me out. First time I was in a car where the guy had it working. Tesla uses, they don't use sensors. There's a combination. Their technology is a little bit different because it relies on cameras and artificial intelligence, where other cars have like simply what they call LIDAR. Well, I think Lexus has that, some others, which is a type of light detection and ranging system. But they do something different. I want to just explain this before I tell you what you're going to see on YouTube. It's about 20 minutes long. There's a YouTuber who does these videos, and he's a former NASA guy, so he's a pretty sharp cat. He was going to go test out Tesla and compare them to other cars that have autonomous driving.
Mm.
So basically, both the Tesla and the Lexus they use stopped when there was like a pop-up child. They had like a cardboard pop-up. Car stopped on a dime. It picked it up. Where it got interesting, though, and the difference was when they made a wall that looks exactly like the horizon, including the road and the blue skyline in the distance, and the Lexus stopped and the Tesla was slammed right into it.
Yikes.
Or through it. So that's not exactly the best advertisement for your Tesla Autopilot, is it?
So my buddy's got the Cybertruck, and he took a video probably 2 weeks into getting this thing because that's one of their selling points, mm-hmm. Mike, about how, you know, oh, you're going to be on the highway, and And for those who don't know, that screen also has like Hulu, Netflix,
right.
gaming systems.
Right.
Okay, so like when you're basically charging your vehicle, you can just be in there chilling and doing stuff, watching shows or whatever. But that screen, so 2 weeks in, he's like, sends me a video and he's like, Cybertruck driving itself. So his hands are not on the wheel.
Right.
He's just, he's on the highway and he's filming this, right? And you can't see inside the Cybertruck, but like he's not touching anything. And this thing is on the highway and it's perfectly straight. It's driving right. itself. He approaches some traffic, truck slows down. He's like, look at this. This is incredible. And that demonstration makes me go, damn. But I still wouldn't trust it.
No, that's when I was in the Tesla, it was an Uber, you can see when you come up to the intersection, and the screen shows you all the things it's sensing. The people in the crosswalk, the cars in the other side of the intersection. I'm sorry. Number one, I love to drive. I don't care. Traffic or no traffic, I love to drive. I love the feeling of being behind the wheel. But yeah, I just don't trust it, man. The guy's name is Mark Rober. So if you guys want to Google Mark Rober on YouTube, it's pretty cool. He has his own channel. He's the founder of Crunch Labs. And basically, as we said, if you're a kid, who didn't love Roadrunner? Beep, beep. And, of course, Wile E. Coyote.
The best.
And this is really, literally one of those type deals. But he can tell you that, yeah, when you look at the video, it goes right through the wall that they built with the horizon on it. So bear that in mind. Speaking of Tampa, I went down there this year for Raymond James. Well, and I was just down in St. Pete for the IndyCar race, down the street from the stadium, of course, Tropicana Field, which has no roof and just looks terrible. Maybe they do need to build a stadium, Carl, in Tampa and not St. Pete. Do you realize they just filled Raymond James Stadium, 65,000 fans this weekend for the Savannah Bananas. The Harlem Globetrotters of baseball filled a football stadium in Tampa, and they can't get literally 15,000 people to go 30 miles, 25 miles over the bridge.
Well, it is still about the product, right?
Right.
That's what that says. If it's entertaining enough, if it's in demand, then people will certainly find a way to pay and make their way to it. And that gets back to, Mike, is the product good enough? And more importantly, is it really about the stadium? Or is it about what you put in the stadium?
Right. It pretty amazing. What they did was, you know, you've seen how they've done football stadiums. They did it up there in Minnesota for the University of Minnesota where the Vikings play. It was kind of cool at U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah.
But basically the north end zone became where home plate and the first baseline was. And, yeah, they had 65,000 fans, folks going bananas for that. So, yeah, I mean, and look, I know when they've played at Gwinnett, anytime these guys play, it's something. It really is. Remember how big it was when we were kids when the Harlem Globetrotters came
huge.
To town? It was
huge.
Orin, did you get to see him as a kid?
No, but it was like every year around like February or so, they would come down to the Omni. It'd be like the Globetrotters and the Circus kind of like back to back, but never got to see the Globetrotters in person.
And if you're a certain age, you got to see Meadowlark Lemon. You got to see Curly Neal. It was big. It was, and yes. I hope they throw the confetti on us.
It was great.
Yeah, it was always a blast, man. So anyway, that's what Savannah Bananas have become. They've transcended. Speaking of transcending, coaching from college, now the pro to college ranks, and just having and living his best life. Bill Belichick with his lovely 24-year-old girlfriend, Jordan Hudson. Did you see the photos over the weekend?
Yeah, with her on his feet kind of playing cartwheel thing.
Surprised to see me here?
Yes, very much so. The 72-year-old was down in West Palm Beach, or Palm Beach, and he's out there on the beach, and he's taking a variety of photos, and then he lays down on his back, and she gets up on his feet, and he's got his feet on her upper hips, and she's kind of doing the like the bird thing and sailing, overlooking her beau, Bill Belichick. If I had told you this was going to happen like 5 years ago, could anybody have imagined this?
No. No, I don't think so.
I mean, God bless him. I'm not begrudging him. You knock yourself out, man. Good for you. But, yeah, went on Instagram, and this is to say it's made some water cooler talk. Some people say it's so romantic. The other people say this is downright creepy.
No, man. Look. They're dating. Whether you like it or not, they're allowed to have fun, Mike, on the beach, just like anybody else.
Right on. Sunshine emoji, muscle emoji, hashtag spring break, hashtag us time, hashtag still got it. I just never thought I'd hear any of that associated with Bill Belichick.
Should he be recruiting?
Well, that's a good question.
Well, he's got game.
That's a good point.
He certainly got game. So, yeah, man, Belichick and Hudson, safe to say that this thing is so far, I mean, for people that it'll last 6 months. Well, this winter-spring romance continues, Carl.
Well, you look, first of all, Mike, he's doing whatever she wants. Right. Secondly, as long as that continues, this thing is going to be a go.
Right on.
At some point when she wants to do things like this and he goes,
I'm kind of tired of it.
Yeah.
Then it's over.
Like when she wants to have a baby if they want to get married.
That's not happening. That's not
unless
happening.
You want to be Mick Jagger, be 80, you want to be 109 at your kid's high school graduation.
Yeah, that's not happening.
What do they say, Carl? It's undefeated, man.
It's undefeated.
It's undefeated.
It's undefeated.
Good for him. Hey, speaking of undefeated, now I think he moves to what 5-2 all time in his playoff history in the PGA. Most of you guys might have been at work today, so you missed the playoff because the sun it set and it was too dark for Rory McIlroy and JJ Spahn, who's got one career victory, has never finished top 20 in a major in his career. He is the definition of a grinder on the PGA Tour. I was pulling for the guy yesterday. He unfortunately had a good birdie attempt in 18, couldn't get it. Good birdie attempt on 17 on the island hole. So Rory and JJ Spahn, they played in the playoff today, and Rory birdied the first hole. It was 16, which is the par 5, 17 the island hole, and then the long par 4, 18. Well, it all ended basically on 17. JJ puts an 8-iron, boom, in the drink.
Mm-hmm.
Wind was really whipping up still.
Ball game.
And I got to be honest, I told Carl, I did get a chance, because, you know, I sleep in because I can, but I was watching it this morning, and I got to be honest, JJ Spahn on the tee at 17 looked like a guy on his way to death row, like literally on his way to the electric chair. He did not have the good body language, or, you know, his countenance did not look like he expected something good to happen.
When this thing yesterday, because I kept waiting after doing all that yard work and cutting trees and whatnot, I was like, all right, golf will be on at some point, because I kept thinking the rain was going to pass, and then when they said, finally, hey, they're going to be, you know, playing tomorrow, I was like, it's over. Rory has been in these big pressure moments, Mike. Now, he's not always come through.
Right.
But this is where you give him an advantage, just like you would give Tiger an advantage if it was Tiger the next day and you go, oh, who? Because you just feel like, okay, this is not going to be as big of a deal. I agree with you. Like, I didn't see it, but I felt like advantage mentally Rory. And I'm happy, man. He finally gets monkey off his back. He wins one, and let's see what the rest of the season
well,
holds.
Well, again, he's got two wins now before the Masters, where some people are saying maybe this is time now for him to put it together. Everybody, including that amateur golfer, the college golfer, who was heckling him, remember they took his phone away.
They did.
Was basically saying, ah, look at you, like back in 2011. Rory hasn't won a major since 14. And a lot of folks go back to that sort of meltdown at Augusta on the back nine.
It was tough.
Where he just kind of, just all hell broke loose. Love to see Rory do it. Seems like he's got his life together, too. The wife, everything's cool.
You know, I'm disappointed. I'm not disappointed. I just, what happened to Spieth? I know he had surgery and all that, but seriously.
He can't put four rounds together.
What happened to Spieth?
No, I mean, he shines for a minute. Fowler was really good for a minute today, and then over the weekend, then he pooped the bed. But I'm with you. I mean, my wife's a big fan of Spieth, but he just can't put four rounds together. So we'll see where the odds go. Rory, I would imagine, based on this performance, has got to be odds on. The one thing which is, I think we all agree, eventually LIV Golf and they will get together, because watching this weekend, and I sat outside watching on the TV, I love watching it because you know all the holes. You know that course. But you miss Bryson DeChambeau.
Well, you miss the stars.
You miss the stars. You miss Koepka. You know, all those dudes. Even Phil. You want to see those guys out there competing.
Sooner the better for me. That's what I miss the most. Every major tournament. And so either way, Mike, happy for Rory to do it. It was just weird because, again, the delay. And, you know, there's nothing they could do about the weather. But, yeah, the viewership would have been a lot higher on Sunday if they were able to finish this thing. But either way. He's got a big trophy, man, and a good win to build on, hopefully, for the rest of the season.
All right, getting a bunch of lies now on the text line and on Twitter now. Apparently, Tesla owners defending their Tesla. Hey, I'm glad you defend your Tesla. Get out of the left lane when you're doing 50 miles an hour. Yeah, that's what they need. Tesla needs a sensor when you're in the left lane, Carl, to take you to the limit, at least to the prescribed speed limit. Okay? If it's 70, you generally get a, I don't know, Carl, a state of grace. Cops give you anywhere from 8 to 10, depending.
Not that
cop at College Park. He don't give you no juice. They got a guy who runs radar as I'm coming to work every day.
Every day?
Big turn. I'm sorry, I'm digressing. You Tesla people, speed up. People in electric cars drive slow. I don't need any data. I don't need any fact checking. I can tell you from my experience on the highway.
Well, and what's crazy is those Teslas are fast, too, by the way.
They go and they can beat anybody. Fast. They got more torque. They can just beat you off the line, man.
Yeah.
I've seen them do it. Hey, man, one last nugget for you. We talked, I think it was last week, about Carson Beck. Looked like from social media that his sexy girlfriend and then broke up. Well, the Cavender twins got back in the mix. Apparently, they were having some fun. A weekend of love. Somebody has a massive luxury condo in Lauderdale. A lot of photos on social media. And now, baby's basically confirming that she and Carson are kaput.
Okay, they're done.
Yeah.
So she's already on to the next, huh?
Yeah. No, not like she's making out with another dude, but according to that she didn't follow him. And basically, out of cryptic videos on TikTok, kind of speaking around it, that apparently Carson Beck and her are no longer a night.
He was a gay manager. Wow.
Well, he couldn't manage that.
No, right? He could not.
Yeah. Well, it takes two to tango.
I was going
to
say, Mike, she might have been a handful.
Let's see how he lands on his feet. He does have many co-eds to choose from in Coral Gables.
I was going
to
say, yeah. Well, is he still driving a Lambo or he moved on to something else too?
Well, whatever he has, get a low jack on that sucker, pal. Hey, man, there's your guy talk. Tomorrow, by the way, we are going to Twin Peaks in friggin' Tennessee. What? Yes. Right before 24 and 75. Pair off. We're going to be right by the Bass Pro Shops just over the Tennessee state line at Twin Peaks, Dukes and Bell, up there from 2 to, I think, what, NCAA play-in. So come down and join the party.
Yeah, 2-6:30. New Realm Brewing is going to be there. They are now available in Tennessee. We're going to be having a big party, man. We're going to be celebrating with those guys and hanging out and drinking a lot of New Realm and enjoying it. So if you are headed up 75, please stop in.
It's East Ridge, Tennessee, technically.
Okay. And if you're in that area and you hear us, which we know you do, come through. We'd love to get a chance to see you guys and hang out. But we're having a big party tomorrow at Twin Peaks up there. All right. We're coming back. Falcon Report's on the way. Why did they do what they did? It made no sense to you. We try to make sense of it next.